Chapter 9. It was the writing on his forehead, said Babalatchi, adding a couple of small sticks to the little fire by which he was squatting, and without looking at Lakamba, who lay down supported on his elbow on the other side of the embers. He was written when he was born, that he should end his life in darkness, and now he is like a man walking in a black night with his eyes open, yet seeing not. I knew him well when he had slaves, and many wives, and much merchandise, and trading pros, and pros for fighting. Ha-ya! He was a great fighter in the days before the breath of the merciful put out the light in his eyes. He was a pilgrim, and had many virtues. He was brave, his hand was open, and he was a great robber. For many years he led the men that drank blood on the sea, first in prayer and first in fight. Have I not stood behind him when his face was turned to the west? Have I not watched by his side ships with high masts burning in a straight flame on the calm water? Have I not followed him on dark nights amongst sleeping men that woke up only to die? His sword was swifter than the fire from heaven, and struck before it flashed. Hi! Tuan! Those were the days, and that was a leader, and I myself was younger, and in those days there were not so many fire ships with guns that deal fiery death from afar. Over the hill, and over the forest, oh! Tuan Lakamba! They dropped whistling fireballs into the creek, where our pros took refuge, and where they dared not follow men who had arms in their hands. He shook his head with mournful regret, and threw another handful of fuel on the fire. The burst of clear flame lit up his broad, dark, and pockmarked face, where the big lips, stained with betel juice, looked like a deep and bleeding gash of a fresh wound. The reflection of the firelight gleamed brightly in his solitary eye, lending it for a moment a fierce animation that died out together with the short-lived flame. With quick touches of his bare hands he raked the embers into a heap, then, wiping the warm ash on his waistcloth, his only garment, he clasped his thin legs with his entwined fingers, and rested his chin on his drawn-up knees. Lakamba stirred slightly without changing his position, or taking his eyes off the glowing coals, on which they had been fixed in dreamy immobility. Yes, went on Babalatchi, in a low monotone, as if pursuing aloud a train of thought that had its beginning in the silent contemplation of the unstable nature of earthly greatness. S. He has been rich and strong, and now he lives on alms. Old, feeble, blind, and without companions, but for his daughter. The Rajapadalolo gives him rice, and the pale woman his daughter cooks it for him, for he has no slave. I saw her from afar, muttered Lakamba, disparagingly. She dog with white teeth, like a woman of the Orang Puda. Right, right, assented Babalatchi, but you have not seen her near. Her mother was a woman from the west, a Baghdadi woman with veiled face. Now she goes uncovered, like our women do, for she is poor, and he is blind, and nobody ever comes near them, unless to ask for a charm, or a blessing, and depart quickly for fear of his anger, and of the Raja's hand. You have not been on that side of the river? Not for a long time. If I go. Dot, true. True. Interrupted Babalatchi, soothingly, but I go often alone for your good and look and listen. When the time comes, when we both go together towards the Raja's campong, it will be to enter and to remain. Lakamba sat up and looked at Babalatchi gloomily. This is good talk, once, twice. When it is heard too often it becomes foolish, like the prattle of children. Many, many times have I seen the cloudy sky, and have heard the wind of the rainy seasons, said Babalatchi, impressively. And where is your wisdom? It must be with the wind, and the clouds of seasons past, for I do not hear it in your talk. Those are the words of the ungrateful, shouted Babalatchi, with sudden exasperation. Early, our only refuge is with the One, the Mighty, the Redresser of. Dot, peace. Peace, growled the startled Lakamba. It is but a friend's talk. Babalatchi subsided into his former attitude, muttering to himself. After a while he went on again in a louder voice, since the Rajalog left another white man here in Sambar, the daughter of the blind Omar El Badavi has spoken to other ears than mine. Would a white man listen to a beggar's daughter? Said Lakamba, doubtingly. Hi. I have seen. Dot, and what did you see? Oh, one-eyed one. Exclaimed Lakamba, contemptuously. I have seen the strange white man walking on the narrow path before the sun could dry the drops of dew on the bushes, and I have heard the whisper of his voice, when he spoke through the smoke of the morning fire to that woman with big eyes and a pale skin. Woman in body, but in heart a man. She knows no fear and no shame. I have heard her voice too. He nodded twice at Lakamba sagaciously, and gave himself up to silent musing, his solitary eye fixed immovably upon the straight wall of forest on the opposite bank. Lakamba lay silent, staring vacantly. Under them lingered Zone River rippled softly amongst the piles supporting the bamboo platform of the little watch house before which they were lying. Behind the house the ground rose in a gentle swell of a low hill cleared of the big timber, but thickly overgrown with the grass and bushes, now withered and burned up in the long drought of the dry season. This old rice clearing, which had been several years lying fallow, was framed on three sides by the impenetrable and tangled growth of the untouched forest, and on the fourth, came down to the muddy river bank. There was not a breath of wind on the land or river, but high above, in the transparent sky, little clouds rushed past the moon, now appearing in her diffused rays with the brilliance of silver, now obscuring her face with the blackness of ebony. Far away, in the middle of the river, a fish would leap now, and then with a short splash, the very loudness of which measured the profundity of the overpowering silence that swallowed up the sharp sound suddenly. Lakamba dozed uneasily off, but the wakeful Babalichai sat thinking deeply, sighing from time to time, and slapping himself over his naked torso incessantly in a vain endeavor to keep off an occasional and wandering mosquito that, rising as high as the platform above the swarms of the riverside, would settle with a ping of triumph on the unexpected victim. The moon, pursuing her silent and toilsome path, attained her highest elevation, and chasing the shadow of the roof eaves from Lakamba's face, seemed to hang arrested over their heads. Babalichai revived the fire, and woke up his companion, who sat up yawning and shivering discontentedly. Babalichai spoke again in a voice which was like the murmur of a brook that runs over the stones. Low, monotonous, persistent, irresistible in its power, to wear out and to destroy the hardest obstacles. Lakamba listened, silent but interested. They were Malay adventurers, ambitious men of that place and time, the Bohemians of their race. In the early days of the settlement, before the ruler Padalolo had shaken off his allegiance to the Sultan of Kodi, Lakamba appeared in the river with two small trading vessels. He was disappointed to find already some semblance of organization amongst the settlers of various races who recognized the unobtrusive sway of old Padalolo, and he was not politic enough to conceal his disappointment. He declared himself to be a man from the east, from those parts where no white man ruled, and to be of an oppressed race, but of a princely family. And truly enough he had all the gifts of an exiled prince. He was discontented, ungrateful, turbulent, a man full of envy and ready for intrigue, with brave words and empty promises forever on his lips. He was obstinate, but his will was made up of short impulses that never lasted long enough to carry him to the goal of his ambition. Received coldly by the suspicious Padalolo, he persisted permission or no permission in clearing the ground on a good spot some 14 miles down the river from Sambar, and built himself a house there, which he fortified by a high palisade. As he had many followers and seemed very reckless, the old Raja did not think it prudent at the time to interfere with him by force. Once settled, he began to intrigue. The quarrel of Padalolo with the Sultan of Kodi was of his fomenting, but failed to produce the result he expected, because the Sultan could not back him up effectively at such a great distance. Disappointed in that scheme, he promptly organized an outbreak of the Bugis settlers, and besieged the old Raja in his stockade with much noisy valor, and a fair chance of success. But Lingard then appeared on the scene with the armed brig, and the old seaman's hairy forefinger, shaken menacingly in his face, quelled his martial ardor. No man cared to encounter the Raja Lot, and Lakamba, with momentary resignation, subsided into a half-cultivator, half-trader, and nursed in his fortified house his wrath and his ambition, keeping it for use on a more propitious occasion. Still faithful to his character of a prince pretender, he would not recognize the constituted authorities, answering sulkily the Raja's messenger, who claimed the tribute for the cultivated fields, that the Raja had better come and take it himself. By Lingard's advice he was left alone, notwithstanding his rebellious mood, and for many days he lived undisturbed amongst his wives and retainers, cherishing that persistent and causeless hope of better times, the possession of which seems to be the universal privilege of exiled greatness. But the passing days brought no change. The hope grew faint, and the hot ambition burned itself out, leaving only a feeble and expiring spark amongst a heap of dull and tepid ashes of indolent acquiescence with the decrees of fate, till Babalichai fanned it again into a bright flame. Babalichai had blundered upon the river, while in search of a safe refuge for his disreputable head. He was a vagabond of the seas, a true Orang Laut, living by rapine and plunder of coasts and ships in his prosperous days, earning his living by honest and irksome toil when the days of adversity were upon him. So, although at times leading the Sulu rovers, he had also served as serang of country ships, and in that wise had visited the distant seas, beheld the glories of Bombay, the might of the Mazkadi Sultan, had even struggled in the pious throng for the privilege of touching with his lips the sacred stone of the holy city. He gathered experience and wisdom in many lands, and after attaching himself to Omar el-Badawi, he affected great piety as became a pilgrim, although unable to read the inspired words of the Prophet. He was brave and bloodthirsty without any affection, and he hated the white men who interfered with the manly pursuits of throat-cutting, kidnapping, slave-dealing, and fire-raising that were the only possible occupation for a true man of the sea. He found favor in the eyes of his chief, the fearless Omar el-Badawi, the leader of Brunei Rovers, whom he followed with unquestioning loyalty through the long years of successful depredation. And when that long career of murder, robbery and violence received its first serious check at the hands of white men, he stood faithfully by his chief, looked steadily at the bursting shells, was undismayed by the flames of the burning stronghold, by the death of his companions, by the shrieks of their women, the wailing of their children, by the sudden ruin and destruction of all that he deemed indispensable to a happy and glorious existence. The beaten ground between the houses was slippery with blood, and the dark mangroves of the muddy creeks were full of sighs of the dying men who were stricken down before they could see their enemy. They died helplessly, for into the tangled forest there was no escape, and their swift cross, in which they had so often scoured the coast and the seas, now wedged together in the narrow creek, were burning fiercely. Babalichai, with the clear perception of the coming end, devoted all his energies to saving, if it was but only one of them. He succeeded in time. When the end came in the explosion of the stored powder barrels, he was ready to look for his chief. He found him half dead and totally blinded, with nobody near him but his daughter Asa. The suns had fallen earlier in the day, as became men of their courage. Helped by the girl with the steadfast heart, Babalichai carried Omar on board the light prau and succeeded in escaping, but with very few companions only. As they hauled their craft into the network of dark and silent creeks, they could hear the cheering of the crews of the man-of-war's boats dashing to the attack of the rover's village. Asa, sitting on the high after deck, her father's blackened and bleeding head in her lap, looked up with fearless eyes at Babalichai. They shall find only smoke, blood and dead men, and women mad with fear there, but nothing else living, she said, mournfully. Babalatchi, pressing with his right hand the deep gash on his shoulder, answered sadly, colon, they are very strong. When we fight with them, we can only die. Yet, he added, menacingly, some of us still live. Some of us still live. For a short time he dreamed of vengeance, but his dream was dispelled by the cold reception of the Sultan of Sulu, with whom they sought refuge at first, and who gave them only a contemptuous and grudging hospitality. While Omar, nursed by Asa, was recovering from his wounds, Babalatchi attended industriously before the exalted presence that had extended to them the hand of protection. For all that, when Babalatchi spoke into the Sultan's ear certain proposals of a great and profitable raid that was to sweep the islands from Ternate to Achin, the Sultan was very angry. "Know you men from the west," he exclaimed, angrily. "Our words are poison in a ruler's ears. Your talk is of fire and murder and booty, but on our heads falls the vengeance of the blood you drink. Begin." There was nothing to be done. Times were changed. So changed that, when a Spanish frigate appeared before the island and Adem, and was sent to the Sultan, to deliver Omar and his companions, Babalatchi was not surprised to hear that they were going to be made the victims of political expediency. But from that sane appreciation of danger to tame submission was a very long step. And then began Omar's second flight. It began arms in hand, for the little band had to fight in the night on the beach for the possession of the small canoes in which those that survived got away at last. The story of that escape lives in the hearts of brave men even to this day. They talk of Babalatchi, and of the strong woman who carried her blind father through the surf under the fire of the warship from the north. The companions of that piratical and son Lesinias are dead now, but their ghosts wander over the waters and the islands at night after the manner of ghosts, and haunt the fires by which sit armed men, as is meet for the spirits of fearless warriors who died in battle. There they may hear the story of their own deeds, of their own courage, suffering, and death, on the lips of living men. That story is told in many places. On the cool mats in breezy verandas of Rajas' houses it is alluded to disdainfully by impassive statesmen, but amongst armed men that throng the courtyards it is a tale which stills the murmur of voices and the tinkle of anklets, arrests the passage of the Surai vessel, and fixes the eyes in absorbed gaze. They talk of the fight, of the fearless woman, of the wise man, of long suffering on the thirsty sea in leaky canoes, of those who died. Many died. A few survived. The chief, the woman, and another one who became great. There was no hint of incipient greatness in Babalatchi's unostentatious arrival in Sambar. He came with Omar and Asa in a small prau loaded with green coconuts, and claimed the ownership of both vessel and cargo. How it came to pass that Babalatchi, fleeing for his life in a small canoe, managed to end his hazardous journey in a vessel full of a valuable commodity, is one of those secrets of the sea that baffle the most searching. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.